Meeting will come to order. This is our 26th meeting of committee members. The committee legislative assistant will note the roll. And Representative Benson has looked over the minutes. And Representative Benson, will you move the minutes?
I would like to move the minutes.
Representative Benson moves the minutes from the April 12th meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? I know he studied them because I asked him ahead of time. So hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes, please say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, we have three bills before us today, and maybe if we move along rather efficiently, we can have a little extra time this morning to ourselves. The first bill up is Senate File 170, brought to us by Representative Kiefer. This is a bill that we've heard in part before. So, Representative Kiefer, I will move Senate File 170 to be before the committee. And note the members that we have a S0170DE2 amendment. It's a delete amendment, and it will be a substitution placed in Senate File 170. And Representative Kiefer, would you like to comment on what might be different about the delete all from your original?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The language, what we're doing is bringing it basically back to the language from the House File 183 that we heard on February 10th. By the recommendations of Lisa Larson, we're also just aligning some language with another chapter in this statute, and we're just cleaning up some language. And then on the recommendation of the Board of Teaching, we're also adding a couple of provisions on page 3, round 3.18, with addressing the out-of-state teacher application. I think that's it. Are there any...
Is there any discussion?
Do we need to vote on this amendment?
Yes, we'll vote on it, yes.
So this is an author's amendment.
All those in favor of substituting the delete everything, the S0170DE2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the delete everything is inserted into Senate File 170. Representative Kiefer, explain your bill, please.
Like I said, this was vetted out quite a bit on February 10th, and we're basically asking any teacher candidate, in order to get a license to teach and be in the classroom teaching, that they have to pass this basic skills exam. This bill has good bipartisan support, and to give you a little background, in the Senate, it passed 63-0 off the floor. And the language that the Senate decided to do was to ask the teacher candidates to actually take the basic skills test the second year into their education program in college. That's not a bad idea, and I'll have my superintendent maybe speak a little bit to that. However, since we're making so many changes right away, the Board of Teaching thought maybe we can just do this at a slightly slower pace. Students can take the test as a sophomore in college if they want to kind of vet themselves, if they want to see what to expect, they have that flexibility. At this point, Madam Chair, I'd like to maybe ask my superintendent, Mark Porter, from District 833, just have a few words about this proposal.
Thank you, Representative Kiefer. I think that I want to call on Ms. Larson for a suggested technical change. Yes, no? Yes, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on the document S0170DE2, on page 1, the new language on lines 12 and 13, that new language has been in all the bills since it was introduced, and in my estimation, it doesn't do anything. Because if the requirement is that the individual pass the test before getting the license, whether or not the requirement that they receive remedial assistance before receiving an initial teaching license doesn't really add anything and doesn't do anything. The requirement is to pass the test. The remediation is before the individual takes the test. So this is not a standard that makes sense, in my opinion.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and I will move that we delete the new language on page 1, lines 12 and 13. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of this deletion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the deletion is made. Welcome to our committee, Superintendent Porter. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Porter. I am currently the superintendent of schools for the South Washington County Schools Independent School District 833, located in the southeast portion of the Twin Cities area, serving the communities of Cottage Grove, Woodbury, Newport, St. Paul Park, and you can never forget Great Cloud Island and Denmark Townships. And approximately 17,000 students in our district, and our school district is encompassed in Representative Kiefer's area of representation. I'm here to speak in support of the proposed bill here to require that teachers in the classroom would pass the exam prior to being permitted to exercise that skill in the classroom. I do think we need to continue to look at how we can raise the bar for our teachers and raise those expectations for them. I do think that a bill such as this that addresses the traditional pathways to licensure should always be viewed in coordination with the consideration of alternative pathways, because I really think that the opportunity is to use both of those avenues to present better qualified teachers in our classrooms. I currently do continue to carry a teaching license in the area of mathematics and physical education, as well as a district superintendent's license and an attorney license. And I know that the language and statute in the state of Minnesota required me to pass the bar exam before I could practice as an attorney. And I think to apply this same criteria to our classroom teachers, who I believe are perhaps more important even than having a well-qualified bar, I think is an appropriate criteria to apply. And I would just encourage you to consider this and to approve this and move it forward.
Thank you, Superintendent Porter. Are there questions from members? Ms. Ballmer, would you like to make a statement on behalf of the Board of Teaching? Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. We have had the opportunity to have dialogue with Representative Kiefer and others on this, actually for the last several years, and we are in a new generation of licensure tests. And called the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Examinations that you may have heard about. The basic skills are a requirement therein for reading, writing, and mathematics. We think that the requirement for having teachers passed and been successful on those measures prior to initial licensure is appropriate. And similarly, we appreciate the author's consideration, your consideration of clarification for out-of-state applicants, those that come to Minnesota with a license from elsewhere. We think that clarification for our purposes is really very helpful, so we certainly support this moving forward.
Are there questions for Ms. Ballmer? Thank you very much, Ms. Ballmer. Are there questions for Representative Kiefer or Superintendent Porter? Are there those in the audience who would like to speak in favor of this proposal? Are there those who would like to express concerns? Please come forward. Seeing none, I will renew my motion that Senate File 170, as amended, with the DE2 amendment, which was also amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and this bill is on its way to the general register.
Thank you,
Madam
Chairman.
Superintendent Porter, and thank you, Representative Kiefer.
Thanks.
Next on our agenda is House File 966, Representative Mariani.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members.
Well, welcome to the committee, Representative Mariani. I will move House File 966, recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And I believe you have an amendment.
Madam Chair, I do have an amendment. It's the A1 amendment, and I would prefer to move that amendment at this point.
Representative Mariani moves the H0966A1 amendment. Would you like to just tell us how it changes House File 966?
Madam Chair and members, this adds a provision having to do with assignments of principals, and I could fully explain the concept behind both the elements before us.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the H0966A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. And so, Representative Mariani, now we have House File 966 in the order in which you would like it. Please proceed to explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will, now better explain both of those provisions as they relate to kind of a basic concept. And I want to thank the chair for scheduling this bill for hearing today. Members, you've heard me and a number of us say that one of the things that we desire from a public policy approach in this legislature is to do whatever we can do to make it possible for our schools to be flexible in a responsible way, in a fair way, but nonetheless to be flexible enough to be able to properly get the right kind of quote-unquote the right kind of professionals matched up with the quote-unquote right kind of students. So I think there's a real strong kind of general principle that many of us are operating this year about really maximizing the ability to have the best interaction based on need of student aligned up with appropriate skills of the professional, whether it's a principal or a teacher in our learning environments. And so this bill attempts to contribute to that, not in a super major way, but in an important small way. The first part of the bill would basically the first part of the bill addresses the issue of discharging teachers for inefficiency. Currently in statute for cities of the first class, we have a language that sets a date, quite frankly, I think an arbitrary date on the calendar by which, after which, a school district cannot move to dismiss a teacher for inefficiency. And if you look at the date carefully, and I have Mary Gilbert here from the St. Paul Schools who can explain this more fully, but if you look at the date, when you factor in all the necessary, what I would think are necessary, I think you would think are necessary steps of mediation, intervention, providing for support for teachers, you would almost have to make that decision in the first couple of weeks in the school in order to not violate that date. And, you know, it's quite frankly illogical to me, and I suspect to many of you, that that we would be able to have that kind of an assessment in the first couple of weeks relative to the inefficiency of the teacher. In other words, that's going to become more apparent, if true at all, that'll become apparent deeper into the school year. And so we've set up a system that frankly, I think in the worst case scenario sets up some real bad potential outcomes. On the one hand, it could set up a school district for making a decision way too fast at the expense of a professional licensed teacher. On the other hand, in the other extreme, it could set up a situation where you have a truly inefficient teacher who refuses to engage in effective interventions to sort of string out the school district, and then after that, the school district, quite frankly, is stuck with that individual because by state law, we've arbitrarily decided they can't be dismissed after that date. Members, this provision does not attack the collective bargaining concepts or tenure concepts, which I find important. Many of you find important in our state law. It just simply removes what is a, quite frankly, arbitrary date therefore that allows school districts to and teachers to approach the very difficult issue of addressing a teacher who might be performing inefficiently in a more responsible way. The amendment that I added, that we added, has to do with principal assignments, and the concept again, members, is the same. You know, we want to make sure that we want the adults best matched up in the right situation, the best situation for our students. And this actually arises out of a situation in our St. Paul School District. I don't want to get too deep into that because it was adjudicated. But I do want to, you know, share, many of you read it in the newspaper, the Minnesota Supreme Court looked at state statute in terms of state statute defining a teacher, or rather a principal, what constitutes a demotion of a principal. And, excuse me, they found that, indeed, you know, a principal in our school district qualified strictly, technically, under that description of demotion, and therefore, you know, results in our school district and other school districts from having very limited abilities to move principals around to the best situations possible. And what they found basically was that even though the individual was not, the district would argue, not demoted, certainly was not reduced in pay, that the mere fact that the individual was now reporting to another individual while on assignment constituted a demotion. This was the subject of a Star Tribune editorial after the decision, basically calling on the legislature to address this issue. And so the language before us addresses that issue by removing the language in state statute, which I think is overly prescriptive in terms of describing the motion, and but nonetheless still allows a reduction in compensation to constitute a demotion and therefore not permissible. And so, Madam Chair, that's it in a nutshell. I do have Mary Gilbert from St. Paul Schools, and I think we also have another individual for St. Paul Schools that can help answer questions.
Welcome to the committee.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Gilbert. Would you like to speak to this,
Madam Chair,
before there are questions?
I think Representative Mariani explained it. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I understand how this applies, and I remember reading the article in the Star Tribune, but I'm just curious. I'm sure there's a logic behind it, but why does this apply only to cities of the first class? Why not generally throughout the educational system?
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, the Cities of the First Class Tenure Act was created as a result when the school districts actually separated from the city, and previously to this, we were actually under the civil service system because all of the school district employees were civil service. And in fact, some of the language that was carried over, like moving to a lower branch of service, is actually kind of some obsolete old civil service language. And so this provision actually isn't in the other part of the Statewide Tenure Act, so it just applies to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Brandon Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, I'm looking at the language in the A1 amendment as it relates to demote, and I can see the compensation has to be equal. I'm just curious about if you were to move somebody into a different position from a teacher, that person could potentially be moved off of maybe the steps and lanes pay program, especially the lanes as it relates to continuing education, and that has compensation, you know, ties to that. I'm just curious if, you know, how you would address that issue. Obviously, the compensation today would be the same, although future compensation could be affected by that. I'm just wondering if you have any comments as it relates to that.
Ms. Gilbert?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, the word to go, again, would be generally... Are you specifically asking about as it relates to a teacher?
Representative Peterson?
Yeah, that would be the example that I used, yeah.
Ms. Gilbert?
Representative, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, the same rules would apply. We do have a structure that we have for assigning teachers as well and pay schedules for teachers. There could be an opportunity where they had a special assignment, and if, in fact, they were
Representative Peterson.
I'll just clarify then. So it is possible that a teacher could be moved into a situation where their future compensation could be affected while still receiving the same salary and not be considered a demotion. Is that a possibility?
Ms. Gilbert.
Under the new definition.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, it is a possibility. I'll get a clarification and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Representative O'Driscoll.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to pick up where Representative Benson left off. We've had some discussions about tenure-related issues, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that we can glean from what we're doing with the cities of the first class that could be a standard practice that we might take statewide, and I guess I don't know specifically who to ask that question of, and maybe I'll just start with you, Representative Mariani, since you do have some experience and it is your bill. If you think that there's anything that's there in the cities of the first class that could apply statewide on this. So,
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I'm not sure what the language, I should know, but I'm not sure what the language, how language reads for other cities. But I think, I would argue that broadly and generally that the concept, the principle here of being able to have a school district make effective decisions relative to principal assignments, that should hold true. Obviously, you know, there's a balancing act that I think all of us want to be able to pay attention to. We're talking about, you know, professionals that we've invested a lot of our resources in developing who themselves have invested in this profession, in the well-being of our students. We do have contracts that exist for both categories, teachers and principals. We want to be respectful of that. But I think generally, I think the general policy push, my sense, across the nation and in here is as long as we're adhering to principles of fairness, that we also continue to push forward with the ability to match up the right with the right kids.
Representative O'Driscoll, I think during interim, one of the assignments that I will have is that we will discuss how we could, depending on what happens in the omnibus bill in regard to teacher evaluation and principal evaluation, look at what we can do about having one standard for cities of the first class, teachers who teach and principals who principal, and those in the rest of Minnesota. So I think that's, even though we're making these changes, I think that's got to be a major assignment that we look at during the interim.
Madam Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, because I was thinking that we do want to probably standardize whatever we do.
Yes.
Statewide, so that we don't get into these tiering kinds of things that are going on, because I suspect that we'll be year after year, session after session, revisiting these issues. And so if we can get people around the table and have that conversation and discussion and provide some standardization and statute, I think it'll relieve a lot of angst for a lot of folks.
And as you heard Ms. Gilbert say, the Tenure Act came about because when the teachers in Minneapolis and St. Paul broke from, at least in Minneapolis, from being under the city of Minneapolis, then this law was created. They had been civil servants. Now they were state employees or school employees. And I think that's what happened is that change occurred. Some specifications were set in law for them, and that grew. And then we had the rest of the state. And suddenly now we're realizing, we don't want this two-tier system. We should all be the same. So we'll look at that.
Thank you.
Other questions from members? Those in the audience who would like to speak in support of this provision. Is Ms. Ricker in the audience?
She's not here yet.
Okay. So we will listen to those with concerns. Ms. Allswiger, welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. Actually, I did not plan to testify today because Mary Catherine Ricker, the president of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers, was planning to testify against the bill. And it's for that reason I am going to keep my testimony brief. She's not here yet. She couldn't get here until about 9, so it's possible she'll walk in the door any moment. And if not, my testimony will have to do. I did talk to her this morning, though, and talked to some of our attorneys. And we feel that this is a situation that happens very seldom. And as the union president has said to me, that if the writing is on the wall and a teacher is not performing, they work with the administration to counsel these teachers out. Very rarely would there be a situation when this law would be necessary, and the union would actually rather be proactive in counseling teachers out if they are underperforming. If you were to do a data privacy request on the situations like this, it would probably be very, very minimal. And so we think that maybe this is a, you know, far-reaching for something that happens very rarely.
Questions for Ms. Allswiger? Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Mariani, closing comments.
Madam Chair, we have, I think, archaic language here. I certainly understand the seldomness, and thankfully these things are seldom. By and large, we have really good teachers in our state. We have really good processes. But I would ask you to join me in removing that language. It's really pretty arbitrary. Nothing in this impedes the ability of the locals in the districts to negotiate out effective, powerful ways in which to support teachers and to enhance their skills. They can do that without arbitrary language in state statute that just picks a date by which dismissal can happen. And I just think it's a good movement on our part that reflects our values of making sure that what's most important is the constant raising effectiveness of our teachers and our schools.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. With that, I'll renew my motion.
Madam Chair, I think this is a good bill. I'd like a roll call.
Roll call is requested. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 966, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. A roll call has been requested, and the clerk will prepare to take the roll.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Depke.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Barrett.
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Representative Dabney.
Yes.
Representative Greiling. Representative Kath.
Yes.
Representative Kiefer.
Yes.
Representative Keel.
Yes.
Representative McFarland.
Yes.
Representative Moran.
No.
Representative Murdoch.
Yes.
Representative Myra.
Yes.
Representative Norton.
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Peterson Brandon.
Yes.
Representative Peterson Sandra. Representative Tilbury.
He's excused.
Representative Woodard.
Yes.
There being 18 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails. The bill is adopted as amended and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
I just like a little extra work in today.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Moran. I will move that House File 563 be before the committee, recommended to pass, and be placed on the General Register. Please begin your testimony.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and members. It is good to be introducing this bill this morning. I believe it is a bill that will really help stabilize our children within local schools and ensuring that they are attending school on a regular basis. So House File 563 makes two small changes to the current transportation statute. It provides an option for a local board to provide transportation under a MAL of a full service or community schools to reduce mobility and stabilize enrollment. And it permits parents to choose other locations like a Boys and Girls Club or other after school programs that may not be licensed daycares for transportation. So section one, it defines a full service school, which is an area which with higher than average crime or other social and economic challenges that also works with others to provide services for a family. And section two of the bill adds other locations chosen by the parents for dropping off or picking up a child, and further adds a full service school zone under the definition of access transportation. So I have Mary Gilbert here, who is going to provide background on the proposed changes, and Andrew Collins, who's going to provide a brief testimony about Achievement Plus, which is the handout you have, or the community school model, and how they are important strategies in closing the achievement gap.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Gilbert, and will you say your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert. I'm the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public School. And briefly, current law allows a school district to provide access transportation if there is an extreme hazard, you know, like no sidewalks at a school, a really busy crossing street, or if it's a crime or drug zone. Those are the two options right now for providing transportation under a mile. What this does is allows a board to designate a full-service school zone to provide excess transportation or transportation under a mile. And the definition of what's a full school zone is included in the bill. And so it would be one where there would be possibly, in our case, our Achievement Plus schools are in neighborhoods where some of the parents are worried about sending their kids to school on foot. And so this would allow us to provide that transportation. And Andrew will talk more about what is provided at those schools and why it's such a good viable option for those families. And some folks are not actually choosing these schools because of the fact that they're not getting transportation. The second provision in the bill just allows the parent to designate the location for picking up or dropping off the child. Last year, this committee actually approved a provision that allowed us to add park and rec centers as a zone. Right now, it generally has to be the home, a relative, a licensed daycare center, a residential facility. Last year we added park and rec, and you should be happy to know that your action helped. We're transporting kids to 16 park and rec centers that are providing after school activities in St. Paul. But we have had an incident come up where we actually had an after school program that wasn't a licensed daycare center that's not eligible under this section, and that's why we've added the provision to broaden the terms so that there would be more flexibility in allowing parents to pick a Boys and Girls Club or a Y. And what St. Paul is doing right now is we're trying to coordinate our after-school activities with all of our nonprofit and park and rec partners so that we have safe places for kids to go after school. So it may be that they're not going to a park and rec center. They may actually be going to a Boys and Girls Club instead. And so this allows that as an option for a parent.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Collins. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Andrew Collins, Assistant Superintendent for Leadership Development and Turnaround Schools. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for letting me speak today in support of our students in St. Paul Public Schools. As the former principal of Dayton's Bluff Achievement Plus Elementary School, which is one of the schools where more students would have greater educational opportunities with support of this bill. Last month, our Board of Education voted unanimously in support of a bold new strategic plan that would reshape our system of school choice offered in St. Paul. It will reduce citywide transportation and replicate successful programs across the city. Of course, student achievement and closing the achievement gap is literally goal one of our strategic plan, strong schools, strong communities. But this plan will also, again, reduce the transportation costs and bring about greater efficiencies across the entire system. As part of this plan, we also want to see that more students can get into high-quality programs, such as the one that I had the privilege of leading at Dayton's Bluff Achievement Plus Elementary School until last spring, when the superintendent asked me to move downtown and assume a new role in working with some turnaround schools and spreading some of the strategies and academic success that occurred at Dayton's Bluff across the entire system. If you recall, on February 15th, I had the privilege of actually sitting right here with Superintendent Silva and sharing some of the strategies and kind of a snapshot of Dayton's Bluff Achievement Plus Elementary School. I think you have the handout in front of you right now, and I'm not going to go into it with the same level of depth, but I do want to kind of identify in terms of what is possible given with a challenging demographic and what some would look at stereotypically and actually factually a very low-performing school a little over a decade ago, where in 1999 only 6% of our third-grade students were proficient and only 4% of our fifth-grade students were proficient in reading and math. The evolution and looking at some of the critical themes that were implemented in the building with the critical restructure and then the momentum that began when I assumed the principalship in 2005, those themes surrounding the culture and climate, looking at capacity building, looking at how we establish data points and how we use data to impact instruction, having conversations about what is academic coherence, offering targeted staff development to all teaching staff, and the big piece is also how we embed learning supports and support the full-service community school model. All of these themes turned into a culmination of a demonstration of achievement results that sitting here proud and reflecting back on the work of not only the teachers, the committed staff, but also the students themselves really assuming a level of self-management and ownership to their own learning. If we're looking at, I don't know, I think it's probably page 3 of your handout, the MCA2 achievement results from last year in math grades 3 through 6, comparing Dayton's Bluff to the district and also statewide averages of percent proficient of students being in excess of both of those categories of what the district results were and what the state results were by race and ethnic groups. As you look at the two slides on the page in both math and reading, you basically see that there is no achievement gap at Dayton's Bluff Achievement Plus Elementary School. And it's to note that the mobility rate in this building is on or about, in my 5 years, anywhere between 40 to 60% in terms of how the building would turn over. We're also looking at a very diverse building where the free reduced lunch rates were in excess of 90% each and every year. It's important to note when I want to go back to and discuss one of the critical themes when we're talking about embedding the learning supports and what it means to be a full-service community school, it's important to note that these additional services that happened in collaboration with the City of St. Paul, Ramsey County, and the Wilder Foundation aren't additional services or extra services, but rather just the alignment of services that are already available for families, but offering them on-site to bring about, again, greater efficiencies to not only the students, but also the organizations, and more importantly, getting results for our students and bringing, again, building upon that vision of what a full-service community school is. As I said before, we're looking to bring about greater efficiencies of the whole system with implementation of strong schools, strong communities. And we know that, you know, personally from the principal perspective, being attached to Dayton's Bluff Elementary School for over 13 years, I know the family's challenges, I know the concerns. I've spent many hours with them in discussion of that. And there are many families that aren't able to continue to attend our school or don't see our school as a viable option because transportation doesn't exist. And what we're talking about is we're looking at the local community and tough decisions that parents have to make about saying, do I send my 5-year-old to walk 10 blocks in this neighborhood to get to the school where I want to send my child, but just that, again, having to make some tough decisions. And I can assure you that the full-service school designation would help more students in the Dayton's Bluff neighborhood and even other neighborhoods similar to that of Dayton's Bluff get into high-quality education, to get the high-quality education that they deserve and that our state depends on. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your excellent testimony, Assistant Superintendent Collins.
Madam
Representative
Chair.
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair, I just want to make it clear that this is just not a provision for the St. Paul Public Schools. This is a provision that there are many districts in the state that are looking at the community school model. And the reason that we use full service instead of community, community service model is because often districts refer to their neighborhood schools as their community schools, and so we just actually had to try and deal with the terminology so it wasn't confusing. So I just want to make it clear that, and there are many, many superintendents who have indicated to us there's a community school organization actually that is occurring because schools, counties, cities, and their nonprofits are getting together all over the state to try and align services at the school building.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the mobility issue is certainly one we've looked at in even down in Rochester for quite some time, and sometimes when we had schools that were struggling, we would check with mobility, and we found that often the kids that were struggling the most were the ones with high mobility, and so we talked about this for years and what could we do. I think what we've seen in my community, and I've taken those calls, are parents who are choosing choice schools, charter schools, private schools, not because they want to go to that school, but because they want their child to have a ride to school. And it's always kind of broken my heart that that's the reason someone would choose to not choose the great public school down, you know. And I think Rochester's a very safe community, but not everyone feels that way, and there is a fear of letting your child walk to school, which is very unfortunate. So I support this. My question for you would be, are you going to do this within the current funding structure that you have, or as you identify more students as able to take a bus, is there funding at the state level that would go along with that? And if so, how are we going to fund it?
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill has no fiscal note. We're going to have to do this within the appropriation that we have.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do have a couple of questions. First of all, we had talked about in along the lines of mobility. Does that also include children that are outside of the full service zone? In other words, when we talk about mobility as it relates to social and economic challenges, if a family moves along with their child outside the full service zone, are you going to continue to provide transportation to them as they open enroll to the school in order to prevent mobility?
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're under certain obligations for the homeless and highly mobile federal legislation that requires that we provide transportation back to the school. So if a student qualifies under the federal provisions, that would be an obligation that we have. The district, any district under its current system, can set up its own attendance boundaries, both regional or citywide boundaries. And so we, as part of our strategic plan, we are looking at reducing our mobility within some of the regions of the city so that we do provide some stability to these families. What this provision does specifically is allows us to provide transportation under a mile. And because we can't provide transportation, we can't afford to provide transportation under a mile to every school in our city, that's why we have this excess transportation category to allow a district to make some decisions based on safety. That's why we need the definition in here to allow something other than crime and drug or hazardous transportation to allow us to make some distinctions about which schools we decide to provide transportation under a mile.
And members, remember, this is not a mandate. This is permissive language. Boards may do this. Representative Depke.
Yes, and a follow-up question. Also, we talked about the definition of community school and that it's not correct or it doesn't really get to what it is that you're talking about in this bill. I noticed that at the end, the last sentence in under the full service zones definition, that you talk about community school. Why do you do that? Why don't we just bring it back to the original full service school zone rather than the community school? Is there a reason for those two different connotations in there?
Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair and Representative Depke, again, community school, neighborhood school, you know what I mean, are kind of interchangeable. It was just language that we used to define the zone around that particular school. Again, since it could be any school in the state, it would be transportation within a mile of whatever school was designated as a full-service school.
Representative
Depke.
Yes, excuse me. I think it's a little bit confusing, and I think as long as we're cleaning up language and there's, you know, we want to make sure that it's clear, I would keep the definition consistent within that. That's my recommendation. That you do that. That would be up to Representative Moran if she wants, if she would like to do that. That's my recommendation.
I'm just going to ask Ms. Larson to think about any suggested change that could occur that might clear that unintended interpretation as we proceed with this testimony. So,
Ms. Larson has a recommendation. I'm sorry, did I interrupt a question you were asking?
No, oh. I was just asking Ms. Larson to be ready.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But she's already ready. Ms. Larson.
I apologize.
Madam Chair, members, on House File 563, page 1, line 14, perhaps you might consider deleting the word community and after school insert located in a full-service school zone so that the phrase would read that school located in a full-service school zone consistent with the paragraph itself.
Ms. Larson, would we change that to A, perhaps, then, and reduce mobility at a school located?
Or, Madam Chair, perhaps the, because you're referring to a school that's been designated to meet these particular criteria, if you don't like that.
Ms. Representative Moran, why don't you give us your reaction to any change in line 14, page 1.
I think the new language is fine.
So, Ms. Larson, would you repeat what the recommended change could be so we all could hear?
Madam Chair, House File 563, page 1, line 14, delete that community and insert the, and after school insert located in a full-service school zone so that page 1, line 14 would read, stabilize enrollment and reduce mobility at the school located in a full-service school zone.
Representative Moran, is that acceptable to you?
That is fine.
Then
thank
let's
you.
Incorporate that language into your House file.
Okay.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor of Representative Benson,
No.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The change is adopted, and we'll go on with questions. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moran, thank you for bringing this forward. The name of this committee is Education Reform, and I like bills of this nature. It seems kind of counterintuitive that we would amend statute that actually takes away some mandates, and I like that idea. I think that the local school districts need to have the flexibility to meet the needs of the population, the constituency that they serve. And so when I first learned of this bill, I was happy to be a co-author, and still am very happy to be a co-author on this legislation with you. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Gilbert probably already answered the question, but I had wanted to ask about why this is actually necessary, but my understanding is that the statute says there is a designated area 1 mile or so from the school, so that you needed an option, I understand, to make this possible.
Is that Ms. Gilbert.
What I'm understanding?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, school districts are under a provision where we have to treat all kids and all schools equally within the district. So if you declare something as a hazardous transportation, you have to apply the same definition of what's a hazardous transportation to all the schools. The same thing, you know, you would have to have some criteria if you wanted to designate a crime and drug zone. And so what this does is allow the board some flexibility, a tight definition, you know what I mean, so they could designate one or two schools. So that every single school now won't be coming to us saying, we want transportation under a mile, we want transportation under a mile. Now, we would be delighted if we had the money to be able to do that, but we simply do not. And so this does allow us, we feel, a much superior provision to allow an exception than saying that those schools were in a crime or drug zone.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Benson stole my thunder there, because that was the same question I had, so I'm satisfied with that answer. And I do support this bill, and Representative Moran, thank you for bringing it forward, because I think it's the kinds of ideas we need in education reform, and we share a very common goal of trying to address the achievement gap, so I appreciate that. And also because this allows the school board to make these kinds of decisions rather than this becoming the state school board, so I appreciate that, too. Thank you.
There are those in the audience who would like to testify in favor of House File 563 as amended. Mr. Heller, are you coming forward? Maybe Ms. Gilbert, you'd let Mr. Heller sit there. Now, Mr. Heller, your question or your testimony has to be relevant to this bill, okay? Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record, and please express your concern or your support.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity. Since we're talking about school zones, it's my understanding school zones are usually within 300 feet of school property. I don't know how this impacts the responsibility of school districts to report those activities that are surround their areas and how this encompasses that. It's something to consider. I also, about this handout that was provided today, on page one of it, under evidence of problems, they have like 1999 to 2000. It seems to me like that would be under the profile of learning. I don't know if that's under our growth models. I'm not sure about that. Also, on page two, I do have one specific question. When they present information under the achievement results, such as MCA data, math, and reading, is that all the accountability groups or some? What grouping? Minnesota does create a graph. It's very explicit. And when information is presented in a meaningful way, helps me to be more engaged what this data actually represents. And I appreciate everybody's time, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Ms. Gilbert, did you have an answer to his question about the first?
Yes, Madam
statement?
Chair and members
thank
of
you,
the committee,
Ms. Gilbert.
This bill doesn't change any other policies or rules that we have related to what is required around the school zone.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify in support or with concerns for this House file? Hearing none, seeing no one, Representative Moran, some closing comments, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In closing, I would just like to say this bill just presents another opportunity for us to give local schools the tools they need to ensure that kids are attending school on a regular basis and are provided the opportunity to achieve. And I think that's what we all want. And so I'm just happy to bring this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moran, for bringing this reform forward. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 563, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and this bill is on its way to the general register. Congratulations, Representative Moran. Members, we will meet again next Tuesday at 8:15. We will meet after the Easter break on that Tuesday, which is what date? The 26th at 8:15 in this room. Be ready, as I think the memo has gone out to tell you that we may have to have evening meetings. On the 26th, we will hear Representative Myra's reading bill. That will be on the introductions today. And also the department bill, which I am carrying. And then we will proceed toward our omnibus bill on the Thursday. So have a wonderful break, and see you back here on the 26th. Meeting is adjourned.